Look at you go, knocking stuff out, letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
I haven't played that one in a while. YouTube, don't kill me. That's a sample. that is a sample. Dan Titus from Yahoo is here. Not just fantasy basketball analyst, but also just basketball analyst in general, which I love. I love when you're on with KOC, Kevin O'Connor, and you get to just talk about non-fantasy basketball and actual basketball. Yeah, filling man. In for Vinnie Goodwill also. Like, I think you're doing some great stuff. So happy to have you on back here again.
I appreciate it, bro. And I want to say the intro music to any kind of live stream or YouTube show is crucial, because I think most people do StreamYard and they switched up their beat to be this like very calm, soothing, like vibey, like I'm on a beach somewhere, like not I'm about to just like spit bars or just like come on some show and be hyped. Like your show got me hyped. So yeah, I appreciate the sample and the work that you did to make that happen.
I appreciate that. There's a producer that I know that I've gotten some beats from in the past that I may hit up for a beat tape just to refresh it a little bit in the near future. But nevertheless, we have NBA playoffs to talk about. We don't have a ton of time here. We both have hard outs at about the same time. So game ones happen. We'll touch on each game. We're probably not going to go the same amount of time on each game, because certain series, like say OKC Memphis, probably doesn't need that much of a deep dive. But I guess where do you want to start? What do you think is the game that maybe taught you the most about what this series can be going forward?
The game that taught me the most. I don't know that one game taught me anything more than what I already knew, but I think I was most surprised by Denver and the Clippers. They do play tonight in game two. What we saw from Russell Westbrook was like the Russell Westbrook experience, like the turnovers, the missed layups, the clutch three-pointer, the hustle plays. Like, he gave us every ounce and bit of his career pretty much in that, and ultimately wound up willing them to and helping them get the victory. The Clippers, I think that game kind of slipped away from them, but I did come away encouraged by the play of James Harden, a guy that everyone has kind of written off as a choke artist in the playoffs. Drops 32 points, 11 dimes. Ivica Zubac has been doing the same thing he's been doing all year long, just being a dominant threat in the interior. And I think that this series is going to be probably the most fun for me from a basketball standpoint. Like, I think with the narratives being driven behind that on Kawhi Leonard and his resurgence, But then also all the drama that's going around the Denver Nuggets. And what are we going to get out of Michael Porter Jr.? This dude got benched in a playoff game, which is crazy. That's going to be a really fun series, but then tactically also a very good basketball series to watch. And I can't wait, man. That's going to be a slugfest. And there's going to be a couple other ones that I like too. But we can start with that one because I think that that's going to be a really good game tonight. And I'm expecting the Clippers to bounce back.
I think that to me, this was maybe the hardest series to sort of like pick a direction, so to speak. And there's a couple of series already, which we'll get to, where I'm like, ooh, I try not to overreact to game ones because I always say bullshit happens in game one. But man, there are some things that we'll get into. So here, just looking at the numbers and this game, if you just watched it and didn't pay attention to the numbers at all, you were treated to a very good one. Obviously, you know, if you're doing this, you have to look at numbers in some form. But you mentioned Michael Porter Jr. I'm going to highlight it here. 26 minutes. He did get benched. And on top of that, it just wasn't it was worse than I think this would indicate here, where you're looking at the 3 points, the four rebounds, not really competing is something that a lot of people got on him for. There were times, even taking me back to the finals against the Miami Heat a couple years ago, where you're watching and it's like, yo, is he even on the floor right now? Like, what's actually happening? And there are times where he doesn't have a shot going, where he still rebounds well. He didn't do that. That's a big red flag for me, because when you go down to like just hear the advanced numbers, obviously he's just 1 for 4. The true shooting percentage is going to be shit. 73 offensive rating, which is kind of crazy. And then you go on down to the Clippers, it's like, all right, I'm seeing 9 deep. So the depth battle here, even though 8 and 9, Bogdanović, you know, Denver was attacking him, and Ben Simmons is not Ben Simmons of old. But like then, I'm looking at the Clippers going 9 deep. And while Denver got one in overtime, I kind of feel like they got away with one in game one.
That's kind of where I'm at with it. And I think that that was where I was considering the difference in these two teams, is that Denver, part of the reason why there was this disconnect and why Michael Malone got fired and Calvin Booth was because there's two different philosophies. One wanted, the GM wanted to play the younger players, and the coach wanted to play the vets. And I think you kind of saw that the depth was kind of inconsistent with the Denver Nuggets, and who was going to step up whenever. Nikola Jokic is always going to do his thing, but if Jamal Murray's having a bad game, who's the next person you're going to look forward to? Aaron Gordon's been in and out of the lineup with health issues. So I just think from a war of attrition standpoint, I actually trust the Clippers more, which is crazy when you consider that Kawhi Leonard's playing on the other side. But just looking at the depth of the Clippers roster, Chris Dunn has been phenomenal, and I expect him to definitely step up again in game two. Bogdan Bogdanović is another guy that provides a threat off the bench. I just think that the Clippers are a better team, and when we're going to go through this gauntlet, you know, game one was definitely a game that slipped away, but this is far from over. I still have Clippers in seven. But I'm expecting that we'll see the Clippers kind of course correct, strap up on defense, and not let the game slip away like they did in game one.
I took Denver in seven initially as a Jokic will figure this out. I'm a little bit nervous about Kawhi and James Harden in the playoffs type of bet. But
which is totally fair based off of history.
History, right? Yes. Yeah. But history is not always going to repeat itself. James Harden, he did have moments even last year's first round series against the Dallas Mavericks. He had a moment in game one. He was awesome. You see it here, 32 and 11. And it was really a continuation of what we saw in the regular season. I think even tenfold, because he was more efficient from the floor. He wasn't super efficient from the floor during the regular season. But like in the context of when you watch the Clippers, that's understandable because of what he has to generate offensively. And then on top of that, the playmaking was really what stood out to me. You see here the 11 assists, but it's also right here the 2 turnovers. And the 11-2 turnover ratio, you're just going to take that every time from James Harden. I want to see more from Norman Powell. I didn't think he was awful, but I feel like this is a series where he could be more effective. 5 for 12, 2 for 6 from three. And I think as a spark plug offensively, he's the type of guy that can win you a playoff game. So I want to see what happens and how Denver responds to if Norman Powell is able to have one of these games where he just goes off. But I thought the Clippers had great production. I think Kawhi was fine. I thought Ivica Zubac was great. And I'm a little worried. Like if I'm rooting for Denver, or if I'm somebody who picked Denver, whatever the case may be, I'm a little bit worried about game two. That being said, if Michael Porter Jr. does have a bounce back performance, then like, you know, I'm not betting on it, but if there are some routes here for Denver to sort of clean this up, too, so to speak, and for the Clippers to maybe like drop a little bit, James Harden specifically from where they were.
Yeah, one of the matchups or one of the players that I'm watching is Nick Batum, because I feel like, you know, he played 24 minutes in game one. He did guard a multitude of players as he would, had his hand at Aaron Gordon, Jokic, Russell Westbrook, Jamal Murray, he even guarded. I'm expecting that he might play a little bit more minutes just because he adds that versatility on defense, and he can also stretch the floor and hit some threes. To your point about Norman Powell, definitely an off game for him, so he's going to have to get right. But I think he's also trying to find his footing now with Kawhi Leonard back playing all the time, James Harden, because he really did much of his growth this year was without Kawhi Leonard on the court. But I'm expecting him to bounce back. He's got the playoff experience, and that's where I like this Clippers team as well. Like they're very experienced in this moment. And I mean, not that Denver isn't, but I think it's more telling to me that Jamal Murray shot 7 for 20. Mm. I think that's probably more of a, I think that's more real than not. I think he's going to struggle in this series just because of the length and the size that, and the depth that the Clippers have. I think defensively you can trust the Clippers and Ty Lue more than what we know about David Adelman and what's going on with the Nuggets.
Two things, questions, comments, anybody commenting, super chats, always welcome. Fiddle checks in, who's been on the show before.
And I said Adam, wrong coach. That's Memphis.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you meant, though. Fiddle says he can't watch this now, but he will watch later. He loves that we're together, said that that's a squad. I appreciate Fiddle as always. And then we got some breaking news, actually. Chris Haynes reporting that the Atlanta Hawks have fired general manager Landry Fields.
Wow.
And Onse Salah has been promoted to the position. So, I mean, this is not an Atlanta Hawks reaction firing to the GM show, but I love when the NBA does business transactions. Maybe I'm a nerd in that way, but do we want to touch on this?
I think we have to because the Atlanta Hawks, like the Chicago Bulls, like the Lakers, like the Warriors, have been a perennial play-in team. And look at the moves that Landry Fields has made. He acquired DeJounte Murray and then flipped him really quickly. I think drafting Zachary Richesche worked out. You know, he's a odds-on favorite. I mean, he's one of the finalists for Rookie of the Year. But I don't know. George Niang, Caris LeVert, making that trade for DeAndre Hunter, that was something that they were trying to do for a while and finally pulled off. But it took them a while to get John Collins off the books. It took him. Clint Capella is still there. Somehow, some way, is still there. There hasn't been enough done around to build around Trae Young to make him successful. And maybe that's a Trae problem. It's possible too. But I think he's been given enough leeway that I'm not surprised by this outcome, because he just hasn't won enough consistently. And it's always had to take some hero ball or luck, in some cases, injury luck, for them to make it anywhere close to being somewhat of a playoff contending team.
The first thing I think about is whether or not there's a disagreement about Trae Young's future in the organization.
Right.
And is what side is Landry Fields on? What side is ownership on? I would imagine ownership would probably be on the side of, hey, we want to keep the guy who people come to see in this city. And Landry Fields could be, this is just speculation.
Yeah.
And Landry Fields could be like, hey, for the betterment of this organization moving forward, and the fact that he has, I think, a 1+1 left on his contract, Trae Young, which I'm going to verify right now. But I think if you're looking at this from just a practical standpoint, dealing him makes sense. And I wonder if that's where this is going. Like, usually this type of thing happens because there's some sort of disagreement on the future of the star player. With Trae Young, he is making $46 million this coming season. So 25-26. And then the player option for 49 after, which means
he's absolutely going to opt out because he's going to get a massive contract.
Well, that's the thing. Now it's extension time. That's what that means. Right. So we'll get back to the playoffs in a second, but I think that that's what stands out to me there. Okay. Wow. All right. That was a bomb that got dropped.
I was not expecting them. Like, I mean, for where he was. Yeah. I mean, I guess record wise, I'm not surprised by it, but I think you're right. Maybe that's a direction firing, not a Yeah, that definitely tracks.
Worth noting that there's a 15% trade kicker that Trae Young has. And obviously bonuses could be triggered with, you know, all NBA, things of that nature. As a matter of fact, there was one on the last contract. The player option deadline is not until next year, which people would expect. It's right before free agency. So I think I don't know what the Trae Young market would be. Like, I don't know who thinks they're a Trae Young away. I don't know how many picks you're putting into a Trae Young deal. The salary matching is going to be interesting too. And then there's a concern about, you know, second apron for a bunch of teams. So I don't know. And look, he may not even be on the market again. Like, if ownership wants to keep him, the promotion of Salah here would probably indicate, like, yeah, he's more likely to keep him. If ownership doesn't care and just thinks Landry Fields did a bad job, then whatever. But, you know, this could go any number of directions. But Atlanta's a team I'd be watching closely this summer for a number.
Yeah, so he's eligible for that extension, $229 million next this upcoming June. Ooh. I doubt he's going to make all NBA this year. So at least that rules out the five-year, 345 supermax. Still, that's probably this is a direction decision. So I wouldn't be surprised if Trae Young is going to be dealt.
All right, let's get back to the playoffs. that was crazy. Let's get back to the playoffs. All right, let's do, because they also play tonight, we'll hit Knicks Pistons, and then we'll get into some of the other series. But Knicks Pistons, if you're following me at all, we're doing the New York Post sports watch-alongs. So the Post is doing watch-alongs for every Knicks playoff game. It's me, it's Dexter Henry, and we've been joined by a guest. We had Doug Lust, who's a Knicks metal recap for the first game. He does songs basically after every Knicks game about the game, recapping the game. And he's quite a talented musician. So in that game in particular, I mean, obviously I could speak to it because I watched it for work. But Dan, what stood out to you the most in this game briefly?
Campaign and Tom Thibodeau actually making a late game in-game adjustment and sticking to it. I think that's said a lot by having Mikal Bridges on the bench, the Iron Man, who played pretty well. Like, I mean, outside of the scoring, like, I thought he did well defensively, but the spark that Campaign provided to go on an epic, you know, record setting run, to hold the Pistons to 0 points for that long. I mean, that just sucked all the energy out of what momentum the Pistons had brought in. And Malik Beasley, I think, had a couple of questionable decisions of how he was taunting the other side. I think that came back to bite him. But as much as everyone's like kind of panicking on Detroit and their inexperience in this moment, I think they're going to be fine. Cade Cunningham had a bad game. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to understand what the defenses that were thrown at him. He'll try to dissect it a little bit better. He played very well against the Knicks in the regular season. So I think we're going to have some course correction here. And I wouldn't be too excited if I'm a Knicks fan, because while Knicks in five has been very popular, I think that the Pistons are going to make this one a dogfight. And they were right there for three quarters, and then they just collapsed. Those things happen. They've only let up 40 points in a quarter, I think 11 times this year. I mean, that's enough of a sample size that it can happen. But now that it happened early on, I think that was a wake-up call. Like, yo, we got to tighten up. JB Bickerstaff understands that. They couldn't buy a bucket. I think there's going to be some positive regression here, and they're not going to score, you know, 20 points in the fourth quarter.
They've blown 16 fourth quarter leads, Detroit has, I think. I think that puts them in the top five of the NBA. And a lot of that would be an experience. That's one reason in the playoffs where I was like, man, I know they're kind of a sexy upset pick for like a small percentage of people, but I can't get to that point. I did have Knicks in six. And for some of the reasons we outlined, this dude right here, Malik Beasley, is going to be an issue. I don't care how much he's harassed in the postseason. Like, he's going to be a problem for this team, just because of the fact that the Knicks but they struggle at guarding shooters. They struggle at guarding
Tim Hardaway Jr., 19 points. Like, I mean, he's also kind of trying to get his lick back a little bit, but that's what Tim Hardaway does. He literally shoots threes and does nothing else. So
they overhelp when Cat is on an island. I've been saying it all year. Mm-hmm. The wings just can't wait to try to double, to send help. And a lot of times it gets there too early, and then Malik Beasley is wide open, or Tim Hardaway Jr. is wide open, or whoever the shooter is when they're playing against, like when the Bulls play. It's Kobe White. It's when the Cavs play. It's any number of their shooters. It can literally be anybody. And same thing with Boston. So that's kind of the issue there. But Malik Beasley, I do have one bet for this game, and I did take Malik Beasley over 14.5 points. I think that's just going to continue. I said there are going to be a couple of games where he hit 7 or 8 threes. He had 6 in game one, and he had 12 attempts. I still think he's going to continue to do this. The problem is the heavy emphasis on him. Like, Kate Cunningham needs to be better because Malik Beasley is essentially their secondary option a lot of times, or their second most preferred shot is a Malik Beasley open three. Tobias Harris, I thought, quietly, as he does, because everything Tobias Harris does is quiet. But
yeah,
he had 25 points and he played well. And defensively, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns was kind of hunting him a little bit. I thought he could have done a little bit more of it, where like Detroit was like, hey, we'll guard you with Tobias Harris. And Towns was trying to punish that mismatch at times.
That's where I feel like the Knicks have the advantage, and they gotta do more. He only had 4 shot attempts against Tobias Harris, went 2 for 4. I mean, Tobias Harris was getting cooked out there. So Towns was 2 for 4. Ananobi was 2 for 2. Brunson was 3 for 4. I mean, they got to just keep hunting him. Like, that's where Cat should have a field day. And for him to only get up, what do you have, like 4 3-point attempts?
He doesn't shoot a ton of threes, and it feels like he could, especially against Jalen Duren in this series.
Yeah.
He only shot 14 times last game also.
Exactly. So like, I feel like
three threes, actually, not even four.
If Cat is aggressive, it's always been a different team. And I think if they're going to put them away through 4 quarters and not have to survive off of hero ball from Campaign and Jalen Brunson, Cat's got to come out offensively aggressive from the onset, attack Tobias Harris, Jalen Duren, whenever you get that switch.
Now down here, if people can see it.
Because what was Tobias Harris? He's almost like a minus 20, right? Minus 16 or something like that. And not that plus minus is everything, but I think it is indicative of, you know, yeah, you dropped 25 points, but they were also scoring on you when you were on the floor.
Yeah, to your point, 124 defensive rating individually. Yikes. Not great. Although defensive rating, very imperfect, but still, I think this is an example of where that matches. But if you look at the usage here, this is something I'm going to be watching for. So Jalen Brunson had a 34.5 usage rating, which I don't think needs to be the case every single game.
No.
He was struggling through that ankle injury. Like, really struggling through that ankle injury, to the point where it looked like, all right, could they keep him out there? He was hurting their offense in the third quarter before turning it around in the fourth, along with Campaign, who had the second highest usage in the game. Towns here is 5th at 16.4. And again, it felt like there were opportunities to feed him the ball in the post when he had the mismatch. Detroit eventually got hip to it, started doubling a little bit, sending help. So, and Karl-Anthony Towns at times this season has been very good in terms of passing out of those doubles, finding a shooter, and the Knicks being able to shift their offense to the other side of the floor. But I do wonder, like, all right, I would like to see more balance here between the Jalen Brunson, Karl-Anthony Towns usage. Brunson still have the highest usage if he's healthy,
sure.
But the ankle is going to be very important to me going forward and how that sort of heals, because red flag for me, Dan, was they had a week. and he was still limping.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not a great sign, in my opinion.
27% usage rate for Karl-Anthony Towns in the regular season. 16 in this game. That's got to be over 20. That's got to be north of 20.
Really 25 plus. I was a little surprised it was 16, but in watching the game, like, it makes sense. He didn't shoot a ton, didn't punish enough mismatches, and there were periods of inactivity, which is always the case. Like,
that's the cat.
He'll disappear for a quarter, maybe two sometimes, and then you're like, oh, wait, he's there. He's rebounding. He's doing something. Mm-hmm.
But I think the Knicks are definitely the Knicks should take care of business. I just feel like at some point the Pistons are going to make this a series, and I don't know if it comes into game two, but we'll see. But they got away with one in the first one. Like, that was an epic comeback. But that's the type of thing that if you have championship expectations, those are the types of things that you need to do to show, like, oh, yo, we were down by 20 at one point and we still got it done. That's a good start for the Knicks in terms of, like, their connectivity and their chemistry down the stretch in important moments, which Jalen Brunson, no question, should be clutch player of the year.
My prediction also was that this would be 2-1 after three games, which is a bet you can make.
Yeah, I like that.
I had it on the side of, hey, I think Detroit wins one of the first two at the Garden.
Same.
We'll see what happens in game two tonight. Karl-Anthony Towns also zero offensive rebounds. I'm going to be watching that pretty closely here. Okay, let's hit the Lakers and the Timberwolves.
That was a fun game.
Let's do that. Not fun for Laker fans. not fun for Laker fans. What were your takeaways from this? What's the thing that stood out to you the most here? And what do you think is real going forward? Because I don't think the series is gonna be this, but there are some red flags in this one.
So two different philosophies of style of play, right? Like the Lakers, this iteration of it with small ball, they tend to do a lot of ISO, swing the ball around, let Luka and LeBron and Austin Reeves kind of do their thing, and then they create points off of that. The issue is the size, and not in the traditional sense of like they're going to get dominated on the rebounds or anything like that. Naz Reid was a problem. Like their ability to get out on their shooters, and then also Jaden McDaniels. I picked the Wolves to win in seven, but I didn't expect that we're going to get the offensive production from Jaden McDaniels that we got in game one. And if he continues, if there's these X factors that are going to continue to step up, whether it be Naz Reid in game one, Jaden McDaniels, if you're getting those offsets, that's going to be trouble for the Lakers. They got to cut something off. And I don't think that they expected Naz Reid to make like six threes. So I think JJ Redick, as smart as he is, and the way that they've made adjustments throughout the season, I think we'll see a more competitive, defensively locked in Lakers team, which to me just seemed like they didn't understand their assignments. They were a little bit late getting on their rotations. They didn't understand. It's like the scouting report was kind of like missed on certain guys, right? Like they just weren't getting out to the shooters. And that's what the Minnesota Timberwolves do. They spread you out. They shoot a lot of threes, and then they create lanes so that Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards can create. Anthony Edwards, his playmaking was outstanding. Julius Randle, you know it well. This man's going to have some turnovers.
Yeah.
On the Minnesota side, if he can clean that up, man, like I think that the Timberwolves are in a really good spot. This is just a very interesting mismatch of styles, and I do like the physicality that Minnesota brings, and I think that their size and that shooting ultimately will be the difference in this series. And I think that was to steal a road game. Game one was a statement game, and hopefully Anthony Edwards' ankle is okay, or foot or calf, but I think he's going to be fine.
Julius Randle's playoff game log is tragic.
tragic. It's just like man, like all Knicks fans know Julius Randle very well. Don't expect a high field goal percentage and a lot of turnovers when it matters most. Like that's him. But
the Timberwolves had 10 turnovers. He had 7 of them. Gives you an idea of where this game went. I mean, he shot the ball well from an efficiency standpoint, but Anthony Edwards kind of like just saves you from too much Julius Randle, as is not.
Look at you go, knocking stuff out, letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you've got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
As Reed, as is Jaden McDaniels, makes me question Julius Randle's future. But look, ultimately, Minnesota played a good game, I thought. I was asked beforehand, like, what impact would Dante DiVincenzo potentially have in this series? That's something I want to watch going forward, because I think given that he was 1 for 5 from three, I'm not taking that as, hey, he's absolutely going to just be a shit shooter the entire series. Like, he's going to have a couple of games here. I like the looks that they were able to generate for him. And granted, the 1-3 was from very, very deep. I think that's something to worry about as well. Same. And it, just in general, like, the Lakers, this is my problem with the Lakers roster, even though I kind of was like, man, I think LeBron and Luka figure it out, but they just don't have enough defense on that roster. Minnesota does. And they need to rely on just a lot of creativity on the perimeter. Like, it's going to be hard work to generate these shots against Minnesota, who, and yes, they have Rudy Gobert, but they don't really like need him in that way. Like, they need to basically stop you on the perimeter more than anything else. And if they're forcing you to take a bunch of inefficient shots and making you work hard, like, I think that's going to be enough. Ultimately, that's what game one sort of taught me.
I mean, do you see the bench disparity here? 43 points off the bench for the Minnesota Timberwolves, 13 for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. They are, it's barren, man. That's you trade depth in some, to some degree.
The Lakers have over here, Vince, like, and to your point about depth, the Lakers really went 7 deep. They don't want to play Jackson Hayes.
No,
it looks like, because they only played him 8 minutes. They gave him the charity start. It's like when you have a college team, or this happens even in the NBA sometimes, where you have a starting center who's just there to start, but they play like 16 minutes. He didn't even do that. He played just 8. And they really, like, I wonder, okay, is Rui Hachimura and Dorian Finney-Smith is going to trade off minutes at the 5? Are we going to see LeBron at small ball 5? Are we going to see, you know, lineups that get really weird? And if that's the case, like, Minnesota can use their physicality to really bother them.
If they're going to run that tight of a rotation, they're going to be tired as hell.
Yeah.
And they're going to get beat up, if, because, like, how often, like, even if you do offset with a LeBron at small ball center, as much as Rudy Gobert may be a liability at times on the court, he can still be an imposing force on the offensive glass. He can create those second chance opportunities. The series is far from over, but I'm thinking long term here, and I'm like, y'all can't just be trotting out a 7-man lineup for a potential 7-game series. With this is going to go at least 6. So
I think so too.
They're going to have to dip into the well a little bit to get some the offset, because they just don't have the horses to keep up physically for a series that's going to be like this. Like, Julius, like, they got bruisers. Like, I think that Minnesota, and they also came in into the postseason as one of the hottest teams in the game. So I don't know. I think that they're clicking at the right time, whereas the Lakers need to figure out some things, and they might need to go. Maybe Jackson Hayes might need to get more than 8 minutes in a courtesy start, just maybe, for the sake of bodying up.
Maybe. I mean, look, if we're getting Bronny James minutes in the playoffs, that's a problem, or a very good thing if you're blowing out the other team. But he got 3. last thing for me on this is just I expect more out of Austin Reeves, which is interesting, because, like, he's not like the main guy here, but, you know, Luka's going to draw a lot of attention. And as game one reminded us, like, Minnesota can't guard him with anybody one-on-one. But if he has to do everything, that's an issue, because then he's going to work too hard. And that means your offense, like, it's not always going to be, what did he shoot, 55, 50, 89. Like, he had a great showing from an offensive standpoint in terms of scoring the ball. But Luka Doncic getting 1 assist is not ideal either. No. You know, you have 15 as a team. Like, the offense, I thought, was stagnant. It was overly Luka reliant. LeBron needs to draw more fouls, which I'm sure he would tell you that he did. They just didn't call him. He would complain about them and things of that nature.
Complaining quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But I get it. It's the playoffs, but he needs to get downhill more effectively. But Austin Reeves, like, you know, to benefit from the gravity that Luka Doncic and LeBron James provide, I need to see more from not just a scoring standpoint, but from a playmaking standpoint, because Austin Reeves is very good about just setting up shooters on the perimeter and things of that nature, just driving and kicking, driving in general, like creating those avenues he can get to the line as well. So he's somebody I'm going to look at. And then obviously, you know, Rui Hachimura, who Laker fans were pissed off about after game one. Need to see more from him, especially if he's going to play reasonably big minutes. He had 30, and I wouldn't be surprised if he averaged that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming in. I mean, J.J. Redick came into the series calling him like the key to their to executing their small ball, lineup. And he's coming out of a knee injury that he suffered in March. So, like, his minutes haven't been crazy high. He took off several games down the stretch in the regular season. So maybe him not being all the way there is also a concern. Even though he did play 30 minutes, he didn't play particularly well in those 30 minutes. 9 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. But I just want to go back last point. To your lack of playmaking, having 15 assists to 13 turnovers, that's an L in any game you play. So
yeah, that's tough.
So I expect that the Lakers will clean that up. They'll get more ball movement, more offensive connectivity, because that was just, you know, they were just not playing their game. And I think you could tell by J.J. Redick's frustration at I think it was like the third quarter, the effort and just not doing the simple things correctly. It wasn't their game.
Yeah, not ideal. I like that you brought up the turnover, the assist to turnover ratio. That's not even that great for a modern day quarterback. 15 touchdowns and 13 interceptions.
Jameis Winston-ish.
I was gonna say that's Gardner Minshew numbers. Like that's the type of shit that gets you benched and then your organization drafts somebody else. let's hit Rockets Warriors because this is one of the last interesting ones left. There's probably another that's I think worth hitting on. This game was super fun. I don't think the final score will capture that for some people, but I love low scoring, grimy, filthy, disgusting, just shitty playoff basketball where it's just teams can't even break 90. I love that shit. So thank you for that. Houston got 85. Golden State had 95. It just took me back. What stood out to you here the most, and what do you think game one taught you, reminded you? Like, what was interesting about this?
Oh, man, that we might have a new the clutches backcourt or the clutches duo in the league right now, because what Jimmy Butler brings, and I know that you were a very proud Jimmy Butler stan for a long time, so you know what he can do on both ends of the court.
He is one of my favorite players in the NBA.
And having... having Draymond play an all defensive, I mean, he played like a defensive player of the year last night. But so did Jimmy Butler, 5 steals. The way that they just suffocated the Houston Rockets anytime that they got any kind of shot or any kind of ball movement or penetration into the lane, there were hands everywhere. The turnovers, Fred VanVleet, very surprising. He's usually a guy that has a very low turnover rate. He was turning it over a lot. Amen Thompson was benched for a time because he couldn't really get his thing together. The defensive connectivity of the Warriors was just locked in. And it really showed. Like that was a top 5 defense for much of the year. So were the Houston Rockets, but sometimes Steph is going to go Steph. And that some of those shots that he was making, man, that fadeaway 3 with the arc was just beautiful. He was clutch all game, just hit every bucket that they needed. And this is, to me, like to your point, like I thought that was probably one of the most entertaining games of the weekend because it was such a dogfight. The physicality, Steven Adams coming in and just having 12 rebounds, 13 rebounds off the bench. Like the one problem that I do have and the question that I have coming from that game is what Jalen Green is going to do in this series, because him not doing anything.
Yeah.
I'm to the point where I'm like, maybe you just have him come off the bench. Because that was not the effort offensively or defensively. And I think Ime Udoka knew it. I don't know why he even threw him in there in the final 3 minutes, just because like maybe he's just trying to get, you know, another score in there. But I don't know. Maybe they do attack them with size. Go with the Şengün at the 4, Steven Adams at the 5. That was a successful lineup for them. Tari Eason played outstanding. They got to figure out some shot making. And I think that was the problem with the Houston Rockets in this series, is that after Şengün or Jalen Green, if they don't have a good game, who's next up that's going to ball out? Fred VanVleet would he shoot like 3 for 17 or something like that? It was ugly. He didn't make a 3-pointer to the final, you know, few minutes of the game. It was a clutch one.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be the difference in this series. Is like, I think Houston can. I mean, you hold the Warriors to under 100 points. Like that's a W in and of itself. But you gotta have to score points. And if you're not going to get anyone else that can generate any offense, this is going to be a long series. It could be a very quick series, actually, because yeah, they're going to need somebody to drop buckets outside of Alper and Şengün consistently. And I think we'll get, I think that just might have been nerves, young team, first game out. You're going against a championship contending team that has plenty of playoff experience, that knows how to win on the road. But this is going to be a great series, slugfest.
Yeah, which I appreciate. A couple things here. I don't think Houston has the facilities to make Golden State pay for not having a second tier or tertiary offensive option that you could depend on. I guess it's Brandon Pozemski, which makes me think, all right, this is why I don't think they're going to get to the finals, along with the fact that Oklahoma City is really good. We may talk about that.
Very good.
maybe 2 seconds we'll talk about that series. Maybe. Seriously, it might only be 2 seconds. But, like, here's the thing. If you look at the offensive distribution here, it's Steph, it's Jimmy. It's going to be Steph and Jimmy heavy the entire series.
That's what then, in the last two games, right? Before that, the play-in game before that for the Clippers. And
for a lot of really, since they got Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of seven. That was kind of the issue before they got him, where it was like, are they even going to make the play-in? Like, it's just Steph and everyone else. And they shelved Jonathan Kuminga, who I think they may need at some point in the postseason. But okay, You know, he's not playing. He's probably one of the answers for that. But look at Houston's distribution here. It's like just Şengün does his 11 for 18. And he can get his on Draymond Green. Like, he could. But the problem is, who else do you trust here? I'm not a Jalen Green guy. We saw why in game one. 3 for 15, also worth noting. That if Houston is going to make the win now move, we're not going to talk trades. I will a ton on this channel after the postseason. Mm-hmm. But like, he's entering a contract extension where he's going to make 33, 36, and then the player option for 36. It's a very movable number. I think that was strategic because I think Houston's like, look, if we're going to do something, like, we're going to need some salary in that 25, 30, $35 million range. It's not a max. It's a young player. And Jalen Green, I think in some regard, you could say you could argue that he's playing for his future. So I think that's notable. Fred VanVleet also has a big number as well. I think Fred VanVleet's going to struggle this series. I think Jalen Green's going to struggle this series. And I think ultimately, this is my issue with Houston. I love their defense. I love the fact that they punch teams in the mouth, sometimes literally. And then, like, but the thing is, their half-court offense is not good. Their clutch offense is very worrisome. And this is where Golden State, I think, is just going to win this series. I still think Houston's going to get a couple of games on them. Like, I'd be stunned if this is just a 4-1 Warriors, you know, just gentleman sweep.
Yeah.
But to me, like, this is a series that is problematic for Houston because of the offense and because of particularly the fourth quarter offense. Like, that's where I'm like, that's where. And Golden State has Jimmy Butler, who's one of the great playoff performers of his era, and Steph Curry, who is probably above that, you know, in terms of being a playoff performer, but also Steph is still Steph. And who else do you want to have the ball in his hands with the game on the line in this kind of situation? Like, Steph is Steph.
I still got Rock. Oh man, I took a lot of underdogs in this first round. I took the Rockets just because, like, for the point that you made earlier, that their offense has just been, the Warriors offense has been so Jimmy and Steph reliant, that if you cut the water off for one of them, what does that do? And it's not that there isn't precedence here. Like, the Rockets held Steph Curry to 1 of 10 shooting. Now, that's pretty rare, and it probably won't happen again, but I think they could still make it very difficult for him. So I think it's just a matter of, I think it's the adjustments that Ime Udoka makes. And I think that he's a very good head coach, defensive minded. I think he's going to make some changes. Maybe we'll see some more matchups that could make it more difficult for Steph to get over some of those ball screens and make some of those other tertiary players the creators. Like, you want Moses Moody shooting the ball. You want Draymond Green launching from three. You want Quentin Prost to jack up those threes in late clock situations. That's what I think we'll get to. And maybe that's an effort thing, but I think it's more of a tactical matchup thing. Maybe we see Tari Eason more. I think we should see him more for the way his defense and energy just impacted the game. So I think we're going to see some adjustments, and I think it's going to be a lot harder for Steph. I think they're going to be playing. I think the refs actually let them play pretty physically.
I agree.
You know, now that if that's the case, I think we could see that the Houston Rockets getting a little bit more physical than they were in game one, which would help their case long term.
Yeah, and to your point, I think Houston does have a lot of answers defensively for Steph and Jimmy, or at least a lot of
options. One of two, right? Like maybe you can't get both, but I think if you stop one, that's definitely going to be a significant upgrade to just letting them cook you for 25 plus the whole series.
I think the thing with that is you need to produce your own offense effectively too.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
there's the whole other side. Like you do the defense part right, you still got to put the ball in the basket too.
And then for Golden State, it's like who his shots. I think there's going to be a lot of unders in this series.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to have multiple like super high scoring games here. Maybe we get one where everyone's just firing, but I don't really see it. All right, as far as what's left, Heat Cavs. I mean, the Cavs are going to win that series in five. Yeah. I think
I had a sweep, but yeah, I could see. Spo's usually good for a spoiler.
Well, I thought it'd be game one more than anything else, because Spo was like 9-4 in game one since 2020. But I mean, when you don't have Jimmy Butler and you're playing through Tyler Hero, it's tough. I think if you're Cleveland, it should be a sweep, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like don't mess around with them. Yep. That's on that series. Oklahoma City, Memphis. I mean, that should be a sweep.
50 plus, man, on game one. Like I've seen enough. Like
honestly, I've seen enough.
I've seen enough. It's a wrap.
I think Indiana, Milwaukee's interesting, so we'll hit that. But first, do we care about Boston, Orlando?
I think the Magic can maybe steal a game, possibly too, but okay. I don't have. It's the same problem with the Warriors; just they don't have the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry aura. Like they don't. Yeah. I don't see where Orlando is going to score outside of Paolo and Franz for this.
That's the problem. Because Orlando's actually, leading up to this, won six of their last nine against Boston, but they don't have Jalen Suggs.
No.
They don't have Jalen Suggs. They could defend Boston better than just about anybody else. They don't have Jalen Suggs, and that's why they won't. But they're the best in the NBA at limiting your three-point attempts, and Boston is the best at generating those three-point attempts. So those things go head-to-head. The problem is, aside from that, Boston can score, Orlando can. And that's really that on that series. Okay.
Enough said.
Yeah, we'll wrap on Bucks Pacers. I don't want to ring the alarm because I'm someone who I'm like, Giannis plus four shooters, that's worked in the past. You know, do I trust Giannis here? But then I'm like, it's going to be Giannis by himself against an Indiana team that might be too much. And I got a couple comments on the segment Matt and I did on this, and they were like, oh, that's disrespectful to the rest of the Bucks. You know, they're obviously going to beat the Pacers. And I'm like, I know it's only one game. And I'm not saying I told you so because it's only one game. But game one is exactly why I was worried about Giannis versus everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't feel great about Damian Lillard potentially coming back either, because it's a blood clot situation. Like that can be a little scary. So, Dan, I toss to you your takeaways from game one. What's real? What's not moving forward? And just where are you at with this series?
So I think Dame's coming back. He's expected to return for game two. I think that matters significantly because we don't have to witness Kyle Kuzma going out there and doing a Tony Snell. Like, bro, like I was surprised he's that bad. Let's like,
pull that up.
You might as well just held on to Chris Middleton if he was going to get that type of effort. Look 22 minutes and just nothing across the board.
Look at this. You're just despite the 21 minutes.
Crazy.
And it's crazy because I like the way he was playing in Washington, not this season, but I think it was previously. Last season.
Yeah. He was actually looking pretty good. Like, I mean, I think that's what they were trying, the upside of the trade. But, I mean, I don't think you saw this floor bottoming out like this in game one. I mean, it was – Giannis looked great, to your point, but it's a matter of, like, who else can step up here. I don't think that Indiana will shoot lights out like they did when they shoot over 60 plus percent in the first half. I don't think that's going to hold. And Doc Rivers, not great for, you know, in-season late game adjustments or anything like that. But I think having Damian Lillard back in the fold and a pissed off one at that. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Just looking optically at Tyree, of Halliburton, every time he kind of talks shit to opposing teams when he's up. I don't think you want that smoke with Damian Lillard, whether he's coming off a blood clot or not. Like, I think him having him there changes the dynamic of this Milwaukee team. So I'm expecting a way more competitive game in the next go round. However, to your original point, Indiana is just a better team. They're They have more depth, their pace, their stars, their versatility. They just have more guys in general. So it's going to take a Giannis-like run with Damian Lillard to just do that champion of like, yo, can we carry this on our own? I don't know if it's enough. And I said this in an article in Yahoo. I was like, the biggest question I had in the Eastern Conference was, if the Bucks get swept or the Bucks get beaten again in the first round by the Pacers, what is Giannis going to do in the offseason? Because something's got to happen. Because if you can't beat the Pacers twice, like, damn. They just don't have the roster. Like, look, like Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., like, you got to rely on Bobby Portis to be your third option at times. Like, that's not going to get it done in the playoffs, man.
I think he might be your second best option looking at these options.
Lopez is like way past his time, man. Like, they don't have it.
I'm a Bobby Portis truther. But yes, he's best suited as a fourth, fifth option, your sixth man, perhaps. And here, I mean, Damian Lillard's going to help, but I just don't know what that's going to look like. And also, like, to give respect to Indiana, I mean, God, one, 63% true shooting as a team is nuts.
Insane.
But also, Al Siakam, I mean, he was
awesome. Did what he wanted.
It's awesome in that game. He was so good.
Nembhard, the way that he can just use his body. The way he bumped his shoulder bump is like next level elite, bro.
I saw the video going around for that. Nembhard, I mean, he didn't live up to my expectations, where it was like, yo, I thought he could be a most improved player candidate. But I do think he's gonna be legit. Like, I think maybe it's next season where like he really pops off and has like maybe a Fred VanVleet-ish type of production. Not this season, Fred VanVleet, but you know, previously. Sure. I think Nembhard could be like a real dude. Miles Turner, who's heading for free agency, so curious what that's going to look like. But you know, he was spreading it out from three, and last year in the playoffs against Milwaukee, like, this is what he does. Like, he went over a lot of times, I think 4 out of 6 games in terms of 3-point makes, which is usually for him at 2.5. 4 for 6 in this game. The first play of the game was a pick and pop to Miles Turner, you know, for a 3-point shot. And I think with Miles Turner, like, him spreading out this Milwaukee defense that I already have questions about, and I'm going to have questions about with Dame there too, obviously, because he's not going to help their defense. He's there primarily from an offensive standpoint, which is fine. They need the offense. But, you know, I think Indiana might be too much from an offensive standpoint and the options that they do have, because you're looking at the distribution here. You have 7 guys on this team with 7 or more field goal attempts. And you have 4 in double digits. And also from a strictly point standpoint in game one, you have 6 guys in double figures. Like, that's the type of distribution that I don't think Milwaukee is going to be able to have on a regular basis, because Giannis is going to have to do a lot. Dame's going to have to do a lot whenever he gets there. And on top of that, just, I like the balance of this roster. Tyrese Halliburton shot like shit and it didn't matter. Not I thought his floor generalship, like, 2 thumbs up on the 12-1 assist turnover ratio. Just, you know, trying to push. I think Indiana has to continue to look for these fast break opportunities, and obviously they will. They're one of the fastest playing teams in the NBA again. But people think that their defense is what it was before, and it's not. It was in the top half of the NBA this year. Like, their defense was, I think, 13th by the end of the season. Their defense could really, like, it's on par for where the Bucks was, or where the Bucks were for a good portion of the year. So, like, there's just a lot of elements to where if you're somebody who liked Milwaukee initially, I would look at this game one and try not to overreact, and also understand Damian Lillard is going to be there. But I don't know how much better it's going to make things look, because Indiana is still going to be able to attack you the way that they did.
Yeah. Indiana top 10 defense since the All-Star break, top 5 over the last 15 games. And you talked about that distribution. I mean, their team is deep. Yeah. Look at that assist to turnover ratio the first game, man. 28 assists to 5 turnovers. And then you look on the other side of the ball, 15 assists to 10 turnovers. I think that was what it was. Let me look. 15 and 10. You're just looking at two completely different teams here. And like, yeah, it's hard to take one game and say that that's what's how you can extrapolate that out. That's what it's going to be. Damian Lillard matters, and I think it will help the offense settle in more so for Milwaukee. But I think you're right. It's the defense. Mm-hmm. How can they stop that? Because whether you got Dame in there either, anyway, they're still going to hunt. They're still going to get their shots in there and play through each other. And the distribution, as you said, the first lineup, the second lineup, they're getting contributions from all up and down their roster where you're not getting that on the Bucks side. So I don't know, man. I picked the Bucks in seven in this one, and I don't – that one I probably feel the worst about. That one is tough, man. Like, I don't – the Indiana Pacers, to me, showed me something different in game one enough that I'm like, shit, I don't think Hero Giannis is even going to save you in this. It's going to be more competitive with Dame back, but, yeah, I think the Pacers are probably going to will out the series, man.
Tough one when you're 9 of 37 from 3 and AJ Green's for 11.
They played hard. I mean, that's
everyone else is 4 for 26.
They played terrible.
Everyone else is 4 for 26. That's damning. All right. Game 2s will be on the horizon before we know it. And before you know it, we'll be in round 2.
Crazy.
Which is going to be fun. Playoffs are always very hectic in the beginning because everyone plays that first weekend. But we're going to have a lot of answers as this week progresses. Don't know when the next live stream is going to be on this channel, but we'll have some stuff coming up. And New York Post watch along for the Knicks game 2 against the Pistons. We're going to be doing that, Dexter Henry and I, tonight with Al Cintron of WFAN. Dan, anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, just keep peeping my stuff on Yahoo. I'll be covering the Warriors games once they come back for game 3 and game 4, hopefully. Mm. And yeah, man, I'll be doing out just trying to do what I can for the playoffs, writing, potting. So keep tapping in Yahoo Sports.
All right, that's all we got. We'll be back soon. Thank you for watching and take care of yourselves because it's a tumultuous time right now going on. So yeah, just be careful out there.
Look at you go, knocking stuff out, letting nothing get in the way. Whatever life throws at you, you throw it back at 97 miles an hour. And if the chips are down, you make more guacamole. Yes, you've got what it takes. Because there's no stopping you with you on your side. Everwise believes in the power of you, cheering as you take on the world. Everwise Credit Union. Confidence changes everything. Now go get 'em.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.